good to see so many of you here today on our family break, our school break, all these things happening. Welcome here to our all ages service. And sometimes being together like this can feel a little bit unpredictable. And in many ways, our series title, Joining Wilderness, maybe feels a little bit more palpable today. There's a little bit of wildness in the air. Can I just say that is really good? It is good that there's some wildness and some unexpected things happening today. It's good to hear all the different voices of all different ages. Just to remind families, we do have a flannel board somewhere here that you could use. There it is. We have a bus there for the little guys to use. We have a plexiglass that you can write thoughts and prayers and pictures, as Kim showed us how to do that. Parents, please hear it from me. Feel at ease. It is okay to have all this happening and a little bit of wildness with us. Apostle Paul in the story of God calls our time together as the church family. And the church family requires us to hear all the voices, all the joyful voices and all the not so joyful voices. That's okay. That's what makes us family, and it's good. So welcome here. Great to have you all together. Now, this Wednesday was officially the beginning of Lent, and we as Lakeview participated in Ash Wednesday service. Now, Lent and Ash Wednesday service invites us to join Jesus in his 40 days in the wilderness, invites us to step into the wilderness time. It is a journey of renewing. It's a journey that exposes and reveals things in us. And 2 weeks ago when I began the series, I began with the idea that God actually calls us into the wilderness. He actually calls us out of the familiar and safe situations into the wilderness to expose and to discover and to renew us. And it's not an accident that we find ourselves in the wilderness. It's not a detour in our journey, but rather it's a deliberate calling. When we begin to take our faith seriously, God actually calls us into the wilderness. And our expectations that maybe in faith, maybe in our belief system, that everything will just be good and everything will work out well. Our youth pastor liked to say, everything will be tickety-boo. That's one of his favorite words. It just doesn't go that way. Life just throws us curveballs. And the wilderness is that great place to examine our expectations and to lead us to trust. To trust that God is with us, both in abundance, but also in scarcity, in good times and in the bad times. So then the wilderness becomes the perfect place to renew and to shape us. You see, what the wilderness does so well is that it exposes all those expectations and allows us to grow in our awareness of God's presence in us and with us. So as we embark into this journey of Lent, as we embark into this journey in the wilderness, one of the foundational passages that we're going to use as we go through week to week is going to be found in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, starting in verse 1 to verse 13. And this is the passage where Apostle Paul, who writes this letter, is showing us Israel's wilderness journey and how it started. And each Sunday we'll unpack just a small part of that passage. Now, before we just jump into 1 Corinthians and just read it, we do have all our kids with us and all the families. And so some of us may know the story of Israel's journey out of Egypt into wilderness. But if you don't know the story... If you don't know it, what it is that God hears Israel, who is enslaved in the country of Egypt. And God's desire is to heal and to save them. And he had for a time had chosen a people of Israel to be his representatives on earth. They were to be the people that would show what it looks like to follow God. They were to do all the good things that God requires. Which sometimes brings a question in our minds, like, what are the things that God actually requires? What does it look like to be good, right? We can ask those questions. What does it look like to be good? What is bad? What is good? We kind of want some pathways. We want roadmaps to tell us exactly how to travel and navigate life. And God actually, in his story, the prophet Micah, reveals this great glimpse for what he expected of Israel and what he expects of us, what it looks like to be faithful and to do good. And it's one of my favorite verses in the Bible. And it simply says this: he has shown you, and I put people, it says, O mortals, but it means he has shown you people what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? What does he want for you? What does it look like? What is good in the world? And he simply says to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. So Israel was going to be this representative of God in this world who's going to act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with their God. And we have seen Israel, if we know the God story, that they would do that sometimes. They would act justly. They would show mercy. They would walk humbly with God. And at times, they didn't. At times, they just really didn't do that. They wanted to do things for themselves. They wanted to figure out life on their own. And they stepped away from acting justly, stepped away from mercy, stepped away from walking humbly with God. And when they did, they found themselves in trouble. And when they did, they often were conquered by their nations. And this is one of these stories. They stepped away from God's call. They weren't acting justly. They weren't acting mercifully. They weren't walking with God. And they were conquered by Egypt and found themselves enslaved to Egypt. And Egypt was subjugating them, was slaving them, was controlling them, was mean to them, was doing things that weren't good. And the people, the Israelites, cried out. Said, God, help us. Help us. We don't want to be enslaved anymore. And what we learn in this great story of God, friends, is that God always hears the cries of the oppressed. God always hears from those who suffer. This is a great reminder for us as we step into this wilderness journey, as we unpack 1 Corinthians, and as we look at what our message is for today, is a great reminder underneath all of this is that God always hears the cries of the suffering. God always hears for those who are hurting. So God hears Israel. He hears their cries and he rescues them. He takes Moses to lead them out and he takes them out of Egypt and leads them into the wilderness. And he takes them out of Egypt and now in the wilderness he wants to take Egypt out of them. And simply what that means, because that could be confusing if you're like, what do you mean taking Egypt out of them? Is really what it means is sometimes when you live in harsh conditions, when we live in places where we're hurt or we are misunderstood, where we live in a way that is removed from God, in a way that we're being controlled, sometimes all we think of life is that life is bad, or that life has to look a certain way for us to control our situations. We must fight for things. We must take power. We must dominate. We have to find a way. And we work within systems of pain and brokenness. And so God leads Israel out of Egypt to then take all those systems out of them, to help them to trust and rely on God, to help them to believe that they're lovable. Right? That they can be loved and that they're lovable. Now, kids, if you're here, you'd be surprised that us adults also need to be reminded sometimes that we are lovable. Because we can begin to live in a system and a way of life that we believe that the world is just too harsh and we're not deserving of love and we're not deserving of care, and we live in these ways of controlling things and trying to find power or just feel completely defeated by the world. And God takes us out of those situations to remind us that we are lovable. And that he loves us. He wants us to believe that whatever bad that we believe about ourselves isn't true. That we're actually his image, that we're actually his children, and he's for us. So here's Israel, they're in the wilderness, and God wants to teach them that they're lovable, that they're good, and he has a way of living for them that's to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with God. But they didn't want to do that. As people found themselves in the wilderness, they found that the things that they desired weren't working. They didn't like how God was doing things, and they wanted to go back to Egypt. In fact, they wanted to live in a way, in a system that they understood. And this is really important for us. They had a want that wasn't being met in the way they thought it would be meant. It just wasn't working for them. And so it's an important thing for us to know is because one of the reasons that God leads us into the wilderness is to reveal the desires that have become more important than our desires for God. And this desire idea is something we're going to focus on today. So now, as we understand this story, that God led Israel out of Egypt, he led them into wilderness, he's shaping them and renewing them, and their desires aren't being met, we're going to read part of 1 Corinthians to help us start for our conversation. 1 Corinthians verse 1. Apostle Paul writes, "Remember our history, friends, and be warned. All our ancestors were led by the providential cloud and taken miraculously through the sea. They went through the waters in a baptism like ours, as Moses led them from enslaving death to salvation life. They all ate and drank identical food and drink, meals provided daily by God." So we know God is providing for them. "They drank from the rock, God's fountain for them. They stayed with them wherever they went. And the rock was Jesus. It was Christ. But just experiencing God's wonder and grace didn't seem to mean much. Most of them were defeated by temptation during the hard times in the desert, and God was not pleased. The same thing could happen to us. We must be on guard so we never get caught up in wanting our own way as they did. Apostle Paul writes this beautiful start to 1 Corinthians chapter 10 to share this story that God was with his people, that he provided for them, that he met their needs, but they were not being met in the way they wanted them to be met. Their desires were not fulfilled. They were angry and they didn't want the way God was feeding them. They didn't want the way God was giving them water. They wanted to go back to enslavement. They'd rather go to the system they understood, even if it meant they were going to be slaves, rather be free and have their needs met in the way God was meeting them. Now, have you ever wanted something so badly you didn't care what other people said, whether it was the time to get it, whether you could afford it, and you just wanted something so bad that's all you thought about? That was like literally the only thing on your mind. You got up, you're like, oh, I really want this, I don't know, car, or I really want this job, or I really want this relationship, whatever it is, and you just wanted it, and you fixated on it, and you thought about it all the time, you dreamt about it, you'd go on social media, and all the commercials seem to be all about it, and you're like, "This is this a sign? Should I get this thing?" And that's all you're ever thinking about. Every time you watch TV, when you go for a walk, it seems to be right in front of you, and you're just thinking about this thing, and it's just like, becomes a desire of your heart, and that's all you get consumed about. Have you had that? Is it just me? Nobody else had a desire they just always thought about or wanted. Okay, well, there's something in us that desires things and we fixated on it. Now, I don't know if you're historians or if you like history, but there's one interesting story about desire that I always think about that's kind of just this marker how our desires can run away on us. And it's in 16th century in the Dutch Golden Age. The Netherlands was a wealthy empire in the 16th century, and there was something that began in Netherlands called the tulip mania. Have you heard about this? The tulip mania. People wanted to have tulips so badly, and it seemed to be like the thing to have is tulips, and they were so such a high commodity that people were spending extraordinary high amounts of payments to get tulips. Here's a great picture of like people bartering and spending money to get bulbs of tulips. The bulbs of tulips were going for like years' wages. I am talking about like the tulip, the flower, right? Right? This desire was so big that in this wealthy society, to have tulips was like everything. People were becoming bankrupt buying tulips. They were giving away all their wages. In fact, there was like a weird stock market that developed over tulips. Like, I don't understand it at all. And eventually it crashed in like 3 years. But the desire to have the tulips spread through the entire wealthy society of Netherlands. It's crazy to believe that this is real, but it was. It was tulip mania. It was what it was called. And believe that to have this tulip would complete your life. If you just had it, then you're finally matching up in life. You finally are like reached a certain peak of life if you had these tulips. And yet, to us, be like, well, flowers are nice. There's maybe some green thumbs here, and you're like, I love gardening. I love flowers. But I would wager you wouldn't remortgage your house for a tulip. At least I hope you wouldn't. But yet, this is what desire and over-desire looks like. And there was a period in time where a whole nation was completely overcome by desire to have tulips. And this is the reason we can joke about flowers, but this is really the reason we live in the world of marketing, where things are constantly being thrown at us and told to us that if you just get this thing, it's going to make your life easier, happier, and better. Whatever product is, it'll be meaningful, it'll be worthy, you'll feel fulfilled if you just get this thing. Even if it means you might have to remortgage, even if it means you might have to put yourself fully stretched financially, or maybe it may come at the expense of your family. See, desires are a funny thing. They play on something within us. They look at something that we want, and they expand, and they grow to a place where it becomes very unhealthy. And I think this is what Apostle Paul is talking about. He's saying, be careful that your wants, your desires, do not become greater than your desire for God. Now, when you hear this, it could feel like, okay, this is another sermon. Oh, I shouldn't really want a lot of things, and I got to be careful with my money, or I got to be happy with what I have. Maybe, I don't know, whatever God is speaking to you. But I do want to say this isn't about feeling shame today. Can I suggest that would just actually miss the point of this conversation? To be clear, what I do want to say and remind us is desire is actually a good thing. Desire is actually a good thing. We were designed to desire. Desire is what shapes us and motivates us. At our core, we know desire is good because God has made us to desire Him. But there may be in our desires an over-desire that has built up over the years to a point where it points us away from God. As I said earlier, one of the reasons that God brings us to the wilderness is to expose these desires, to expose these wants in us, and to make us wonder, where is this coming from? Am I aligning to who God is? Am I aligning to where He's calling me in my life? Or am I being pulled into a different direction? The word that Apostle Paul uses in 1 Corinthians for desires is compound word that literally means over-desire, this intense desire. In other contexts, Paul translates this word as lust. And the danger of this over-desire is that it is a desire that is misdirected. Not that it's bad to have desire, but that it is misdirected. And if we think about desire having an object, like an archer would aim at a target, right? This is a good thing. So desire is aiming at a target. This is how God has designed our desire. But an over-desire is that aim that aims at the wrong target. So you have a good target, but you begin to aim at the wrong target. And that kind of misdirect desire is shaped by and directed toward life outside of God's requirement to act justly, love mercy, and to walk humbly with our God. Now, another translation of that verse 6 that I read in the Message paraphrase puts it this way. These things happened as a warning to us so that we would not crave, that we would not over-desire evil things as they did. Now, Apostle Paul explains this. He says this, that we might not desire these evil things as we're reading. Evil is one of those words that we may actually want to resist. And it's like, oh, do you want to use the word evil when we're having all-ages service? That's kind of a scary word. No one wants to think that they desire evil, right? Like that may be something that dictators or previous generations or really, really bad people do, but not us. And this is an important moment for us to wrestle with, to consider what this actually means. And to realign and remind ourselves that underneath every desire is our desire for God. And the goal is not to get rid of desire, but to understand how and to whom we are directing our desires. What are we aiming at? And so evil is another one of those words that may need to some redefining as we look at this desire part. It can be helpful to think about goodness. What is good? Simply put, good is that which is experienced in the context of trusting and loving relationship with God. As we listen to God and trust what He says about life and trust how He's leading us, we're living in the good. Again, if we come back to the Micah 6:8 verse, right? What is good? The answer is justice, mercy, and to walk humbly with God. And I want to say that often people actually identify with the first two elements really easily, justice and mercy. We're like, yeah, justice is good. We all want justice. We all want mercy. But we often forget the third, right? But the third is actually the linchpin. It is what effectively leads us into the other two. See, in fact, I want to suggest that sometimes we act out wanting justice or mercy outside of walking humbly with God that leads us into bad places. Walking humbly with God, we might say, is the essence of goodness. In contrast, evil is not walking humbly with God. Not trusting His heart and what He says about life and what He says about love. Evil will be defining things on our own, living independently of God. This is what temptation in Genesis 3, this is like when people were pulled away from God initially in the temptation in the start of the Bible, is they were tempted with, you can't trust God. He's actually holding something out from you. He's trying to manipulate you. And they believed that lie. Essentially, we might say that the contrast between desiring evil and desiring goodness can be understood respectively as independence from God and dependence on God. See, I think what Apostle Paul is driving at here is he's saying when you acted independently, you pulled yourself out of God's plan and your aim and the desire that God has put in you went to the wrong target. Now, I just do want to just a note of caution. We often, when we talk about, you know, missing the mark, and we talk about sin, and we talk about actions as looking at sin, which is independent, heart can stir and shape the desire of sinful act. Like, when we talk about these things, we often think about actions and behaviors, and it could feel kind of like, I'll do better, I'll change, I get it, I'm kind of feeling ashamed about it. But can I just say, this is not what we're talking about here. This whole wilderness journey is actually just realigning and renewing our hearts. The road of our renewal and transformation is actually our hearts. And when our hearts are reshaped, and when our desires of our hearts are realigned to the right target, our actions and behaviors will follow. So following Jesus is a journey of the heart, is understanding how we're shaped. And in the wilderness, we're often tempted to actually just focus on our behaviors and our actions. And perhaps this is simply another way to stay in control, right? If I just do this better, then I'll be better. I'll change. And we try to control our life independently from God. And yet this wilderness journey is actually this realignment of our heart, realignment of our desires, realignments of saying, I don't need to do, but I need to recognize where the desire is coming from and realign it, realign my heart to God's heart, which actually leads to freedom. So why does God lead us from the familiar into this wilderness? Can I just suggest that this whole story of God is teaching us that he leads and calls us out of the wilderness to bring us out of slavery, to remind us that all our desires are actually from God and for God. And we learn from Israel that though they saw the miraculous ways of God rescuing them and taking them out of the subjugation and slavery of the empire, they missed it because their desires still wanted to work in the structures, in the structures they understood. They still wanted to control things on their own and say, I like Egypt, we can make things better. And God calls us to recognize that our heart's calling is actually for him. And our heart sometimes in all its desires gets realigned at the wrong target, which brings more problems, which brings more slavery and less freedom. So ironically, dependence on God and realigning our desires to him actually leads us to freedom. What God is teaching us in this movement in the wilderness is that it exposes our desires and invites us, invites our independent pursuits to actually be realigned to dependent way of life on God. And the dependent way of life actually leads us to true freedom. So how do we do this? How do we do this? Let me suggest a few things. First, can I just suggest when we're led into this wilderness and we have these desires, and I've just said the word desire a million times today, and you're like, okay, well, what do I do with this? How do I aim at the right target? How do I realign my heart to it? Can I just say first and foremost that don't suppress your desires. Desire is a beautiful, powerful thing. When desire is suppressed, it actually becomes more powerful under pressure and may lead us into places we don't intend to go. So don't suppress or ignore your desires. Instead, look at desire, holy, unholy, unknown, and notice what is true at the deeper level of our desire. What we learn in the wilderness is that our wants and desires are really desire for God. So when you desire something, don't suppress it. Ask questions. Where is this coming from? Why do I want this? What is the God desire behind this desire? What is the gift that God wants me to know in this desire and reveal to me? Secondly, can I just suggest that we desire and we want things to pray about our desires, to invite God into conversation, to let God shape and redeem our desires, to let God reveal what those desires are all about, to understand what he's calling us into. Many theologians over centuries said a different way. Augustine said we have a God-shaped hole in our heart that only God can fill, but we try to fill it with a whole bunch of other desires, and we try to fill them, and they work for a while, but all of a sudden, but they leave us lacking. So can I invite us not to suppress them, but then to pray over them and say, God, I have this hole. There's this need in me that's calling out, and only you can meet it. Can I invite you to pray over it with your family, with your kids, with on your own? God, what is it that I'm desiring? And ask God to reveal it. And thirdly, can I just invite us in our life to practice gratefulness? See, many of our misdirected desires are a result of jealousy or lack of gratefulness. So much of our desire is connected to seeing what others have and wanting it for ourselves and missing the target. There's something longing in us and we see other people have it, and so we aim at a target wrongly. In fact, this is the only reason tulip mania can exist. Those people have so many tulips. I want those tulips. I want to have some. Conversely, when things are received as gifts from God and used obediently in the service of God, they are enriched with gratitude. As sages have said, contentment lies not in obtaining things you want, but in giving thanks for what you have. So, our God leads us into the wilderness to help us move from independence to dependence. He does this because on our own, in our independent ways, we grab and clutch and we want things, and we understand certain systems in our world of power and how things work. And to replace one system, we use the same system to replace it, and we keep failing. And God says, depend on me. Act justly, love mercy. But don't forget the third one, walk humbly with your God, which is the linchpin for the first two. And so our response is simply, do not suppress desire, but examine it. Pray through that desire and then practice gratefulness. I'm going to invite the band to join me on stage as we're going to respond to God through what we're hearing about God leading us into the wilderness and the things that we want in life. But can I just invite us to consider that, is that we often want independently solve our problems. We either feel shame about things we did wrong, and then we say, I'll do better, I'll fix it, I won't do this, and on our own, based on the other systems that we know are broken, we try to fix it, and we just continue the problem. And God invites us, depend on me, trust me. What do I require of you other than just to act justly, love mercy, but walk humbly with me? So don't suppress your desire. Examine it, because God has placed a desire in you. Examine what's the thing behind your desire. Then pray through it. Pray through it too, for God to reveal how you can step into those moments of God leading you and guiding you. And then, friends, practice gratefulness. That gratefulness is that God stewards and provides for us just as he did for Israel in the desert. It may not be the way we want to. They got manna when they wanted meat. They were disappointed, they were angry at God, but yet he provided for them. So practice gratefulness. Let's pray. God, we thank you that as a family, as a church family, we can gather with all the voices and all the ages. And God, we all want something in life. And sometimes our wants are realigned poorly, and we think we can solve those wants by just getting what everybody else has, or strive to have whatever our neighbor has. And our over-desires are missing the mark. So God, would you reveal to us what you're calling us into? Would you reveal how you can fulfill those desires? And would you help us be grateful in how you provide, even in scarcity in the wilderness when we have very little? God, we thank you for your goodness. As we sing to you, would you guide us and speak into our hearts? Amen.